you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, and welcome back to Mind Body Peak Performance with your host, Nick Urban. If my voice sounds a little off, it's because I caught a certain respiratory illness late last week. I've now recovered, but my voice is a little behind. So I'll keep this intro shorter than usual. Don Moxley is the Director of Applied Science and Brand Development at Longevity Labs Incorporated in the United States. Dedicated to helping people live vibrant, fulfilling lives at all ages, Moxley draws upon his career as an athlete, a sports scientist, and an instructor to lead and educate on the science of autophagy and longevity. Focusing his work on the cell renewal benefits of a supplement called spermidine, Don is a respected longevity science leader known for making the complex simple. Throughout his life and career, Moxley has applied science to enhancing well-being. A former captain and Big Ten championship winner with the Ohio State University wrestling team, Don served as the university's first sports scientist. By giving athletes the ability to track their progress in strength, cardiovascular, and resilience training, he helped the wrestling team win a national title in 3 Big Ten championships. He has helped athletes achieve 2 Olympic medals, 4 world championships, 7 national championships, and 23 All-Americans. You can connect with Don on Twitter at Don Moxley, M-O-X-L-E-Y, on Instagram under the same handle, or at spermidinelife.us, spermidinelife.us. And if you want to give this supplement a shot, you can use the code URBAN15 to save 15% on your order. This is something that I only recently started supplementing in 2022, but so far the research looks promising. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Don Moxley.
Don, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
And I am excited to be here.
Great. So let's start off light and simple with the usual question. But so far today, what unusual or non-negotiables have you done for your health and performance?
Well, this morning I woke up, got rolling, had a cup of coffee, which is usually part of my starting process. I'm a decaf drinker because I typically drink a lot of coffee. I'll go through a liter a day sometimes. So wow. if I'm drinking that much caffeine, then I get shaky. And then I got a good workout in this morning, and finished my workout with a sauna. Got about 35, almost 40 minutes of a little over 200, over 190 degrees, most of it, but a lot of it rolling around 200, 205.
That's nice and hot. And do you place your sauna session at the beginning of your workout, end of your workout?
After. It's after. Yep.
And are you just stationary? Are you meditating? Are you stretching? What are you doing in the sauna?
No, I'm usually listening to media, a podcast. What was I listening to today? The Huberman podcast I was on today. They had one of the advisors for the company I work for, Longevity Labs, is Dr. David Sinclair, the researcher out of Harvard. Yep. So he was on the Huberman podcast. So I was getting that down the hatch while I had time.
That's perfect. It's a great morning routine. And so how long is your total routine?
I typically try to get it in right at an hour. That's usually where I fit that in there. If the weather's nice, you know, I'm in central Ohio right now and we're having below zero temperatures, below freezing temperatures. I am a bicycle rider. My main form of exercise, the thing I love the most, is I love to ride my bike. I ride by myself. We live in this little town outside of Columbus. It's called Granville. And I have a 14 miles rails to trail right in my front yard. So I can take my bike off the hook. I can go get a great 20, 22 mile ride in, hang my bike up, and boom, I'm right back. I'm right back in work in my office. And that's my favorite.
Not bad. I grew up on a mountain in just north of San Francisco. And although when I was younger, I used to be forced up there and some tears may or may not have occurred, I've since come to love biking, and it's such a great way to immerse yourself in nature, get sunlight, relax, unwind, and preferably not listen to too much. So you can really just like take advantage of that long, yeah, methodical time.
When I'm on my bike outside, it's literally my only, I don't have something in my ears. I'm not listening. If I'm driving, if I'm exercising, I've usually got a headset in, and I'm using it to listen to podcasts or to books on tape or things like that. I'll really only flip over to music when I'm going hard, really hard in a workout. If I'm going to have, you know, when I'm thinking zone, I typically train in zones, my five zones, and I spend a lot of time in zone two and three.
Can you describe what the zones are?
Yeah, they're heart rate zones. I personally think the single most important piece of equipment you can use as a biohacker or as an exercise person, and that is to use a heart rate monitor. It is absolutely critical. Let me take that back. It's not critical because so many people do it without, but it's so valuable. The amount of information, the amount of motivation, it gives you a great scorecard. So I spend a lot of time looking at heart rate, and I use five zones. So the bottom of zone one is rest. The top of zone five is max effort. The top of zone three is what we call anaerobic threshold. It's kind of where we've maximized your aerobic motor, but you're not really creating enough anabolic byproduct that is beginning to accumulate. So I turned 60 on my next birthday. You know, back when I was younger and I was wrestling, I spent a lot of time in zone five, zone four and five. And I think athletes probably spend too much time in zone four. This is the value of intervals and things like that. But, you know, as you get older, there's a lot of value that comes from training in zone two. There's a huge mitochondrial contribution. You may not be getting the enzymatic changes that you get up in zone three, but zone two is a really good place to be. So to answer that question, that's how you try to listen. Zone four is basically a black hole. There's no benefit training in zone four that you don't get in zone three. And it comes at the cost of cortisol. So when you're starting to accumulate lactate, the body recognizes that. You start to accumulate cortisol, you get a stress response. When you're training in zones two and three, you can do that multiple times a day, every day, and not worry about overtraining. And that's one of the value props that come with being able to know what your heart rate is.
Yeah, I agree. And whenever I travel, I might not have weights near me, but I always have a backpack, and my backpack's like a military grade backpack that's built to withstand a lot of load. And so I'll often find big stones or something and carry around 40 pounds and look down at my heart rate monitor, my Garmin, and I'll see that, yeah, I'm up at around zone three, and it requires virtually nothing. I can do it anywhere, anytime. And it's might not be the same as a super intense sprinting session or a heavy leg day, but it still, right, does a lot. And what you said that I want to highlight there is it doesn't come at the cost of cortisol, because cortisol, right, is obviously a stress hormone. And when it's prolonged, it's elevated for a very long period of time, it starts to break the body down. And a lot of us, myself included, under recover. So, yeah, because I'm not recovering enough, I'm not sleeping as much as I should be, it probably isn't smart for me to constantly be training in zone four.
Well, and you know what? What was really interesting to me when I was working with the athletes at Ohio State, when I was there, exercise with athletes, and I think exercise with anybody, it's about economics. It's about return on your investment. If I'm going to put time in, what do I get the best return on? And again, I'm not an athlete anymore. I've accepted that. I'm a guy working his way. You know, my daughter just moved out of our house. My wife and I have one child. She moved to Chicago last weekend. My wife and I are officially empty nesters. We're entering what we call our third of life, and I've raised my child She's on her own. She's doing good, but I don't have that in my house anymore. And so my exercise now is about living longer, getting to that point. And frankly, I don't need near as much zone five as I had back when I was, 20 or 30. Mm-hmm. I get a little bit in now, not nearly as much, but I really give myself permission to do a lot of good zone two work. And I combine that when you're throwing sauna in on top of that, that's another hormetic stress, that has a similar response than to exercise. And listen, when I'm in my sauna, I go through zone three and tap zone yes. four a little bit at the end. I've done zone five saunas. That's hot. It's hot and long, but and I'm an old wrestler. We used to ride bikes wearing plastics in the sauna, cutting weight. But I like the heat, and it's a great hormetic stress. And so I throw that into, and it just makes a nice little routine for me.
Mm-hmm. And Don, you've had quite the track record yourself. Can you tell me about your experience in athletics and bouncing back from injury?
Well, yeah, back then I had surgery every year. I had to have a knee surgery literally every year. I had my first five knee surgeries were right after season every year I wrestled. By the end, it was like getting my oil changed. There was a meniscus tear, something that was locking. I would go in, get it scoped. I wrestled Olympic trial qualifications 11 days after one of my knee surgeries. So it got kind of routine at a certain point. I'm not sure that's great advice, but the ignorance that comes with, competition. I had my first five. I've had eight to date now. Ripped another ACL out skiing out in Colorado. That was much more enjoyable hurting that one than the previous five. But I popped an ACL in this crazy bump run in Copper Mountain, Colorado. And then recently I just had to have two more, in the last 2 years. I had some loose bodies developing in one of my knees from the ACL reconstruction 27 years ago. And I wound up with a MRSA infection, that really sucked. Spent September and October in bed, IV antibiotics, about six Percocets a day to get through. But got through it and doing good now. So that was my eight knee surgeries.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to hear this and think, wow, Don has had eight knee surgeries and I've had zero or one and my knee hurts and I feel like I can't recover. So what are your tricks? You clearly like the sauna. Do you have any other special protocols you use?
Well, I'll tell you what's a huge tool. If your knees are hurting, listen, it's about inflammation. It's about lowering inflammation. And so exercise does that. Sauna does that. We're going to talk about Spermidine during the show. Spermidine does that. Well, an interesting product is called glucosamine. Mm-hmm. Glucosamine chondroitin, you can buy it at Sam's Clubs or Costco. Glucosamine causes autophagy and the drop of inflammation in the joints, in joints like the knees. So glucosamine is a big tool of mine.
One thing I've learned recently is that if you're deficient in sulfur or in glycine and MSM plus glucosamine together are making a big difference, sometimes you can get that same benefit from the diet if you know what to eat.
Yeah. Listen, the challenge is in knowing what to eat. And there's one thing about knowing what to eat, but there's also, we live in a time when our food is so heavily industrially produced that many of these micronutrients just aren't there.
Yeah.
It may be a good looking green head of broccoli. I know the difference between cauliflower and broccoli. One's green, one's white. But then again, we know this with Spermidine in a lot of the food sources that the Spermidine levels, we have trouble finding high Spermidine foods in the United States. That's the reason we extract our product in Europe. There's a lot of different rules, agricultural rules about how things are raised, and it changes nutrient values.
Yeah, we've killed the soil here, and without healthy soil, you're not going to get produce that's rich in the vitamins and minerals that used to be. I've seen some pretty staggering numbers about just how far the levels have dropped. But one thing I like that you might not be able to get good, clean broccoli or cauliflower that it's as micronutrient rich, but you can sprout things that yourself at home. And that's one little thing. And it's not the Absolutely. Easiest and most convenient, but it's a great way to make sure you're getting some of those.
Or your own garden. You know, I go back to, again, growing up, I had two brothers at the time. So there was five of us in the family. I stand about 6'1". I walk around about 275 pounds now. I'm the smallest one in my family. My younger brother, 6'9", at one point was a biscuit over about 350. He was a big boy, played football at Ohio State, was a good high school wrestler. I had an older brother that wrestled too. He was a little taller than I was. So you can imagine my mom and dad trying to feed those three boys. And we had 2 acres of garden. Mm-hmm. And we did a thing back then they thought we were crazy, but we grew up in the strip mine area back in Eastern Ohio. And when they reclaimed the strip mine, they had really rich crops that they put in, alfalfa, crown vetch. And we grass fed cattle.
Wow.
And everybody thought we were crazy. They thought to finish cattle, you got to put them in a feedlot. My dad was a pretty smart cat. And so we grass-fed. So our diet growing up was grass-fed beef, grass-fed, organically grown. We didn't use hormones in our pork. We usually put a couple deer in the freezer every year too. And we raised a garden. We had plenty of nutrients.
Yeah. So glucosamine, grass-fed, high-quality meats. Anything else in your list?
Well, high-quality. Listen, you can't ignore the micronutrients. You know, so much of our nutrition recommendations right now. You know, I've had the opportunity over teaching over the last 35 years. I probably taught nutrition a dozen times in the courses that I've been part of, and typically on a nutrition course. I call it Wardwell nutrition. You teach vitamins, proteins, fats, carbohydrates, vitamins, minerals, water, how to read a food label. And that's really what nutrition 101 is at most courses. When we do this, we don't spend enough time understanding food source, food quality, nutrition quality. Everyone's hung up on the macros, and so much of longevity and so much of the high quality of life is about the micronutrients, some of which are not on the essential vitamins and minerals list. So as you start to look at that, you know, this is where there's some real value that comes by kind of spreading your experience and learning to shop at a farm market when you can and trying to get your foods from high quality sources.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to come up with something called the information diet, where it ignores, I mean, not ignore, but macronutrients come second. And I firmly believe that if you're optimizing for micronutrients, it doesn't matter as much what you eat, because it's going to be primarily whole foods and high in the good microRNA and exosomes and different things that help you become like a healthy, vibrant human.
Yeah, there's probably something there. I mean, and we're just on the verge of really trying to figure out how to do this and how to help people understand what their needs are. You know, there's so many people in this world that are just trying to bust their ass to make a buck and get through the day. You know, we've been blessed in the fact that we work in an industry. Listen, I don't have to punch a clock at 8 o'clock, whether I'm a bus driver or a taxi driver or a garbage collector or someone like that has to go out and do that work. And it's hard. Listen, it's hard for them. And, you know, you and I can sit around and talk about micronutrients and exercise and sauna and longevity. But, you know, there's so many people that are just trying to punch a clock and get their day in and pay their bills and get their kids, you know, and get their kids to the same place I've been able to get my daughter to. It's hard for some people, and we have to have compassion. We got to do our best to support them and push for kind of reforms and support that support that kind of that help those kinds of people.
Mm-hmm. So a big focus of your career has been working with athletes on the recovery front, and good, clean foods are going to help with recovery. But why have you focused so heavily on recovery?
Well, what we found is that, where this work really took place was in 2015 through 18, when I went back to Ohio State to work with the wrestling team again. And the coach there and I got to be good friends. He had come over to my, over my left shoulder here, I've got a nice looking facility that's in my house that I can do testing on. I can do a lot of work in that facility. It's an old lab. And he had come over and gotten some work done, and he had some wrestlers that he was struggling with. And he says, listen, I just want you to work them up. And one of those kids came in, and one of the things I've learned to do when testing people is I always measure heart rate variability prior to the test. Now, to talk about heart rate variability is a measurement of your autonomic nervous system status. Now, let's go down that rabbit hole a little bit. So your autonomic nervous system is your automatic nervous system. It's the one that functions that you don't have to think about. Yeah. So it runs your organs. It's your stress system. And with your heart rate variability, we can tell, are you under stress or are you in recovery? I started doing this. I used to work with firefighters and police officers, and they had a testing requirement that they had to meet. Well, I'd have guys show up for 8 o'clock tests, and I'd look at their HRV, and it was very low. Low is bad. It was very low. And I'm like, so tell me about what have you done? I said, did you just get off work? And they look at me like, how did you know that? I'm like, well, your HRV says that. You have not slept in a while. Mm. And if I test that guy right then, I put him at risk of not passing his test of, you know, I need to have these people these people give their lives to us, whether a firefighter or a police officer, I need to do my best to make sure he shows his best on the test, him or her. So that's when I started doing it. But then Tom Ryan, the head wrestling coach at Ohio State, brought some wrestlers over, one he was struggling with. And I went to test this guy, and his HRV was 10 milliseconds. Now, to put that in perspective, if a bear walked through the door of the room that you're in, your heart rate variability would probably go to about 8 or 10 milliseconds. That's a full stress response. And this kid, this was on a Sunday morning, close to, 36 hours after wrestling a dual meet, but having plenty of time to recover. So I see 10 milliseconds. I had him go lay down. It climbs to 100 milliseconds, which is a good reading, what we would like to see. But as soon as he stood up, it dropped back down to 10 milliseconds. So what his body perceived is just the act of standing up was a full stress response. So we did the testing on him, and we figured out that, you know, I said to the coach, I said, listen, this kid's very talented, three-time Pennsylvania state champion, very talented wrestler, should be All-American level, should be really doing well. And he was not doing well. Hmm. I told the coach, I said, listen, you can't train this kid the way you've been training him. If you continue to do that, he'll break. They're lucky he hadn't broken yet.
Yeah.
So we worked together. I put some training caps on. And basically I modified 9 workouts with this guy by putting training caps. So we lowered the intensity that he was exposed to in practice, number one. Number two is I put in workouts that took him to an optimal space for training for him. It was not zone 5, it was zone 3. Mm-hmm. So we started doing zone 3 workouts. We put training caps on, modified 9 workouts for this kid. And he went from where he's barely winning matches to where he made All-American that year. Mm-hmm. And Ohio State won a national title that year. So all of a sudden, everybody wanted to understand what I was doing. Mm-hmm. So we started a sports science program with the team, and we measured everything. In 2017-18, I measured 3.5 million data points on a team in 1 year. But what we found was the determining factor in the 2018 national championships, we qualified the entire team for national, the entire starting lineup, 10 guys, first time in school history. We had 8 All-Americans, most in school history. We scored more points than ever in school history. I knew who would make All-American and who wouldn't the first day of the tournament based on their recovery scores going into the tournament. But what we find is that for everybody listening to this, that's not an NCAA wrestler, recovery is critical. Mm-hmm. Recovery, listen, without recovery, there is no progress. When you train, when you go out and strength train or you do a cardio workout, you actually get weaker. But with recovery, you supercompensate and get stronger. And we can measure this with HRV. And that's one of the great things about HRV as a tool. And my recommendation is after you buy your heart rate monitor, you buy a tool for measuring recovery, an HRV tool. And I use an Oura ring. That's personally one of my tools. There's another good product out there that's called BioStrap. They do a really nice job. It's a wearable device. They have good software, good science. And those are the two that I really recommend. And I think that if you're trying to optimize a heart rate monitor and a heart rate variability tool are pretty important pieces that you should add in.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I'm wearing the new Oura Ring, which...
The three?
If you're not an existing customer of theirs, there's a monthly membership too. So for most people, I'm actually steering them towards the BioStrap because I did a side-by-side comparison. I wore both at the same time for a bunch of nights. And I found that my BioStrap was actually like subjectively more accurate to my vitals than Oura. It wasn't by a ton, but it's a little bit. And without the membership, it's nice. But it's one thing to know, like, yes, okay, here's my HRV. And I know that it's one of those metrics that's most commonly recommended, like to keep your eye on and notice if it drops, notice if it spikes. But for most people, I think the knowledge ends there. It's like, okay, I see that it's down. Now what? How do you take that information that you see, say your HRV and your Oura dropped? What do you do from there?
And this is one of the reasons I like BioStrap and one of the reasons I like Oura is their software is pretty solid. There's a lot of recommendations. Listen, you can't fix HRV without fixing sleep. Mm-hmm. If you don't have sleep fixed, there's not a hack for bad sleep. Yeah. You've got to fix it. There are hacks for improving your sleep, but you have got to get that working. And there's lots of really good tools for that. And I leave that to the sleep experts to opine upon, but, you've got to get into that, so it starts with sleep. It starts by understanding training, overtraining, undertraining. Mm-hmm. That's where heart rate monitor comes into play. You know, when I think of longevity, I think of what I call four big rocks in the jar. There's five big elements. So the four rocks are you have to have movement. And this applies to elite sport performance too, to a degree. Movement is critical. Yeah. A hack for movement is exercise and or sauna or things like that. You combine those and you solve the movement. I call it that's the rock. The second rock is food. Getting food that's not been highly processed, getting food that was, you know, a generation ago was alive and reproducing. Once it's overly processed, you lose a lot of those micronutrients and then supplementation on top of that, understanding the supplementation, there's really good tools for figuring this out right now. And I don't know that it's possible. And this is a big change in my philosophy over the last decade. You know, a decade or two ago, I would say you should get your nutrients from food and food alone and don't worry about supplementation. I don't think you can do it anymore. I think supplementation is important. The third rock is light. There's good light and there's bad light. And it's important. I heard a number the other day, they said 80% of the DNA in the nucleus of your cells orient to the circadian rhythm. Mm-hmm. Okay. NAD, one of the important molecules that drives that, but that's how important light is. Being able to get up in the morning, get some light, getting light on your skin. And there's bad light too. So understanding, listen, it's after dark here where I'm at. And I'm sitting here with a bunch of artificial light flooding my face. It's going to affect my melatonin response. I mean, you know, now I'm still a little bit early. I don't start to crank it down for another hour yet. But if we were doing this interview, I try to be in bed 9:30 to 10:30. Again, I've been married for 32 years. I got no catting around to do. I get to bed and get good sleep. Mm-hmm. But if I'm getting flooded with this kind of light at 9:30, it's going to drop my melatonin levels dramatically. Those are going to have to be responded. So understanding that light thing is important. Getting into light in the morning is important. And then finally, the fourth rock is sleep. Which comes from those other three. And those four rocks go into the jar of what I call purpose. In the absence of purpose, you don't have a place to put those four rocks. Yes. So you got to figure out what it is that you're here to do, what it is that's important to you, and get the four rocks in place. You know, listen, this analogy comes from Stephen Covey's The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, you know, a basic, and he talks about, you know, if you don't get the big rocks in the jar, and you try to fill the jar with sand and gravel, the rocks won't fit. Get the big rocks in the jar. A lot of these hacks will be sand and gravel that you put in around.
Yes.
But get the big rocks in the jar first, and that jar is purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The North Star gives you your direction while you're sleeping, while you're exercising, while you're eating clean. And I mean, for the ex-college athletes, it's very relatable that once you lose that North Star or it changes.
Oh, it's hard.
All of a sudden you lose that, and it's like, okay, why am I working out? Maybe I shouldn't push it quite as hard as I usually do. Maybe I should sacrifice a little bit of sleep because I can.
It's that decisional balance. What is the hassle of making that decision versus what's the hassle versus what's the benefit? I don't know if you're a Prochaska fan, Stages of Change. Very important book. If you're an exercise leader, it's called Changing for Good by James O. Prochaska. But it's called the Trans-Theoretical Model. And the first step is what's called decisional balance. Is the value of the change greater than the hassle? Listen, back when I was single and I was out running around, you know what? The value of going to bed early was low because I had other things in mind. Yeah. We've resolved that. But I'll put it back, even in that time, back when I had a focus on wrestling, yeah, my friends were going out late, but I knew I had a match or I knew I had practice and you made a decision. Not always the right one, but we made most of them right. So understanding that value, the purpose that goes with it. And, again, I turned 60 on my next birthday. It was when my daughter drove away Sunday, it was hard. My wife and I were entering a new phase of our life. We just spent the last 24 years. We've been married for 30. We have spent the last 24 raising this child, and now she's out. She's on her own. Wow. So we're back in our house, just the two of us. It's been a long time. I want to live. I want to be healthy and vibrant and vigorous for the next 30 years. I tell people, I've coached Olympic medalists, gold medalists, silver, bronze, multiple sports. I've coached NCAA titleists. I've worked with very elite people. The best coaching job I ever had was coaching my daughter's eighth grade field hockey team.
Really?
I loved it. And now I no longer care. You know what? If I never coach another Olympic medalist, it won't break my heart. But I'm looking forward to coaching my grandchildren. That's my purpose.
Oh, I see.
And that's what orients movement, food, light, and sleep.
Yeah. Don, I know you mentioned that your model, you break it up into thirds, three thirds of life.
Of life, the life model.
Yes, but with all the breakthroughs in life extension, longevity, medicine, you might have to change it to fourths.
You spend the first third of your life learning. Mm-hmm. That you're in school, growing, learning. And then you spend the second third of your life in service to others, raising a family, working, things like that. That third is the first part of your life that's yours, that you get to make the decision, okay, what's in this? And when I say yours, it's my wife and I together. We are one. And so I'm not making decisions based on my daughter. We live in the house we live in now because when my daughter was born, we didn't live in a place we wanted to raise children. So we made the decision to move into a community that was a great place to raise kids. And we did it, and it was great. I don't need to live here anymore. My kid's out of school, and we're starting to look for where do we want to live.
Yeah,
I've tried to move to Colorado twice. The first time I started dating my wife and we fell in love and got married. The second time she and I were out skiing in Copper and we're looking at houses, we get back and shortly thereafter we find out we're pregnant. And all our family were back here. But again, we've now moved into third. And we're making those decisions. And again, my purpose has shifted. We're starting to figure that out.
Okay, so I guess instead of revising the model, we'll just tack on an extra 20 years to.
That third section needs to be really long. Needs to offset the first two.
Exactly. Yeah. And part of that is, as you've discovered, the whole concept of the performance longevity trade off or seesaw. Can you describe that and how you view it?
It's interesting when you look at it at a cellular level. One of the things that is associated with longevity and good health span and lifespan is this process that we call autophagy. And if and I think you've probably talked about it before, but it's an intracellular cleaning process. We found out about it. We really started to understand it through calorie restriction, fasting. This stimulus, you know, animals that eat less live longer. Mm-hmm. And when we start to look at it, we also see that this regular consumption of food, you know, daylight to dark, that's where the inflammation comes from. There's a lack of autophagy. Now, what are autophagy triggers? Well, calorie restriction is one, but exercise is a longevity, is an autophagy trigger. Heat is an autophagy trigger. Reactive oxygen feed. So there's lots of, we think there's at least 67 different proteins associated with autophagy. Mm. Now, so when we start to take, now the other side of autophagy is cell growth. This is typically recognized through an intracellular protein called mTOR. So when you're a young athlete and they say, hey, you want to get strong, you're eating multiple meals a day, what you're doing is you're feeding that mTOR process, building proteins. And those processes typically work opposite of each other. So as mTOR goes up, autophagy goes down. As we run into a situation where mTOR goes down, you'll start to see autophagy upregulate. There's a lot of conditions that go with that. But as an athlete, you're really feeding that mTOR cycle. Now, as you shift, the challenge with mTOR is not all the proteins that are made correctly. So if you have a protein that comes out of the ribosome and goes through the endoplasmic reticulum and is not folded correctly, it just sits there in the cell. It doesn't go into function. And if those build up, that's where we get the senescence and the problem with the cells. So it's important that we get the autophagy process in, particularly later in life, particularly third, you know, second half of second, third, and third.
And the issue with that is these senescent cells, they're still consuming energy. They're still vying for resources, but they're not giving back. They're being greedy and not performing the functions they should perform.
Well, and it's also like the bad apple in the bunch. That one apple rots and it starts to rot the apples around it. That's the same thing with senescent cells. When you have a cell that goes senescent, it starts throwing off a lot of inflammatory markers, which starts to transform the cells around it to become senescent. And it's a bad growth cycle. So you've got to get those out. So again, listen, you have to be strong. There's no doubt that strength is important for quality aging. And I would never suggest, in fact, the most important people that need to lift weights are old people. Yeah. There's no doubt. So strength needs to be part of that program. But you also have to have the other side of that. And a lot of this goes back to paying attention to what's going in your pie hole more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. And so then there's the lifestyle things, like you mentioned, such as fasting, such as exercise, light, different things that activate AMPK and the autophagic process. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's also like supplements and compounds you take. And one of them that I want to talk a bit about is called spermidine or spermidine, however you want to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big focus of yours recently.
Yeah, I'm working for a company now that's called Longevity Labs. And one of our founders, Dr. Frank Medeo, who is an Austrian biochemist, he identified that spermidine, this molecule spermidine, is critical in the autophagy process. Autophagy, understanding autophagy is relatively new. They gave a Nobel Prize in 2016 to a Japanese researcher that was able to really describe the process. A lot of the terms I'll use today came from the research that was done then. And then Medeo has built on that, understanding how spermidine can enhance that process. So we have a nutritional product that we sell that's called Spermidine Life. And as what we know is that people who live long, like people who live in blue zones, I don't know if you've read that book or not, Nick, but blue zones are five areas around the earth where people live into their 90s and 100s fairly routinely. What we know is that they have high spermidine diets. This is what comes from that. And we know that as you add spermidine to the diet, it increases spermidine at the cellular level and it increases autophagy. It's pretty straightforward. We kind of expect it to eventually achieve nutritional necessity status. When we start to look at the role of spermidine, it's one of these molecules. Again, it's called a polyamine. It comes from an amino acid. So if I have an amino acid and I strip the acid off it, I have an amine. So there's carbons and a nitrogen there and the accompanying hydrogens to go with that. So a polyamine, there's three nitrogens in spermidine, and it's critical in this autophagy pathway.
Why couldn't I just take an essential amino acid complex and get some of the same benefits?
One of the struggles with that, there's one particular, arginine is the one particular amino acid that, arginine and orthanine, there's two different pathways. A lot of this takes place in the gut, and there are some probiotics necessary to do the conversion from the amino acid to the polyamine. And a lot of them may not be in the gut. So, again, this is part of the challenge. You know, we really don't, we know the gut's important. We know probiotics are important, but we don't know the recipe yet. Mm-hmm. And until we really get that recipe down, when you can just consume it directly, you know, that's the other way to get it. You know, if you're Japanese and you like the product natto, which is the fermented soy, I can't choke it down.
Yeah, me either.
If you can eat natto, you don't need the supplement spermidine. There's plenty in that. But when you start to look at getting spermidine from other food sources, the amount of spermidine in the food varies dramatically. And again, the more heavily agriculturally produced, it looks like the lower it is in the product.
What are the other non-longevity benefits of spermidine? Like, say someone who's in their 20s or 30s, what benefit would they get?
Well, let me ask you a question, Nick. What's the benefit of investing in a 401k when you're in 20s and 30s?
The benefit comes down the line when I'm retiring.
So the same issue would be looking at longevity practices nutritionally. You know what? If you don't start your 401k when you're 20 or 30, you'll probably be okay. It's like a metabolic 401k. Now, depending on your food and where it comes from, you know, you may be able to push it off later. We are working hard to find markers of autophagy so that we can measure, okay, what's the effect of taking this supplement? Right now, we see the effects secondarily. We know there's an increase in what's called epithelial stem cell production. So the cells that make your skin eventually become your nails and your hair, those become very stemmy. We have an upregulation of those. And one of the first things people notice is their nails start growing like crazy. Mm. Now, there's an indication that spermidine was low and it's upregulated. We also know, we live in a time of COVID. And we know that the COVID virus interferes with the autophagy process. It overdrives it at the beginning and interferes with it at the latter sides of the process. But if you have upregulated autophagy from other sources, COVID isn't nearly as big an issue. We have a paper that came out of Berlin that showed human immune cells supplemented with spermidine stopped COVID transmission 85, 90, 92% of the time.
Wow.
Because of the upregulated autophagy. Hmm. We know there's improvement in neural performance. When you take a look at degraded neural performance with older age, like Alzheimer's and dementia, well, these are the buildup of proteins in the neural cells. Hmm. Well, we have another paper that came out of Berlin that showed patients who took spermidine did not have the regular decline in dementia that other people did. Hmm. So it arrested the decline, held it center. We're now working on, say, can we improve dementia? That's coming next. So we see that improved neural performance. So immunity, neural performance, cardiovascular performance, all of those things have been associated with increased consumption of spermidine, and it's typically related to the improved autophagy. Hmm.
So there's longevity benefits, there's overall health benefits, there's neural benefits. Are there like any performance benefits?
if I could find one, I would be talking about it. Okay. I wish I could, you know, having come from that world, I would love to be able to say, you know, there's an interesting paper out there on traumatic brain injury, spermidine and its impact on traumatic brain injury. You know what? If I had someone that was worried about a concussion or something like that, I might be thinking about this. Again, this hasn't been researched in human. It hasn't been cleared. But, you know, right now, the typical head injury treatment is they put someone in a dark room for 2 weeks. And I think we have to be more aggressive than that.
Yeah, I interviewed Dr. Shanti Getz, and we talked about how to use advanced HRV and resonant frequency breathing. And we touched on some, like, potential TBI protocols.
Hyperbarics are huge.
Yeah, hyperbarics are a good one. There's so many things you can do. And unfortunately, it's polar opposite of what I learned back when I was playing my sports.
When you look at TBI and or any kind of, you know, head injury, you know, getting energy to the brain, lowering the inflammation, those are important things. And there's some interesting things rolling around. Creatine, CBD, methylene blue, using hyperbarics.
Exogenous ketones, because the brain's glucose metabolism is impaired.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because ketones and autophagy kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Right. So as signaling molecules, they wind up being, there's some interesting benefits there in both of them.
Yeah. So then I have to ask, because this is a big one, but will spermidine break a fast or enhance the fast?
You know, listen, that's the $1 million question right now. So let's talk about what breaks a fast. So typically, as I look at the chemistry, what's going to break the fast, what's going to lower autophagy is going to be the upregulation of mTOR, right? What's got to happen for that? You're going to have either an insulin response or an IGF-1 response.
Yeah.
Insulin comes from glucose. IGF-1 comes from proteins. Neither of those are going to be sufficient in the level necessary that you're going to consume. Now, we are a wheat germ extract, so there's going to be some fats. There's going to be a little, but there's not going to be anything there that's going to cause an insulin response, right? Mm-hmm. So when I think of fasting and breaking the fast, listen, I am fine waking up in the morning, having a cup of coffee, putting MCT oil in it. I don't have glucose. I don't have proteins. I'm fine carrying my fast through with that. And there's a lot of concurrent thought that goes with that. So the question is, you'll break the fast when you consume something that's going to upregulate insulin or IGF-1.
Yeah.
That's how I would explain it.
Cool. Well, then I'll take it along with my morning coffee then.
Yeah. You know what? We're releasing a product for sale only through physicians. That's a 6 milligram product that comes in a stick pack that you mix with water. So whether you mix it in your yogurt or put it in your coffee, you know, or tea, you know, we're slowly moving that direction.
Okay. And what's the benefit of that versus what you currently offer?
It's a higher dose. So our current product is a 1 milligram a day product. Which comes from the European Union's recommended daily dosage. We're an Austrian company, so most of our science is established in Austria. So that's the regular dose. I won't be surprised to see us raise that level at some point in time. But this 6 milligram dose came from research that we did up in Germany. And we've tested safety to 12 milligrams a day. Oh. And so our safety profile is really, really good. This is half of our safety profile.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I mean, because a lot of companies don't test for safety, and it's a glaring oversight, because why would I want to take something if I'm not sure it's going to be safe?
So there's a lot of spermidine products on the market. Right now, Spermidine Life, Longevity Lab, Spermidine Life is the only one that has been tested in humans. No one else has achieved that level yet. So all of our work is done there. It's the original, it's clinically tested. We're a really good science company, and that was the appeal of this company to me.
Yeah. And if folks are interested in connecting with you directly or picking up some of your spermidine, how would they go about doing that?
So if you want to learn about spermidine, the best place to go is spermidinelife.us, spermidinelife.us. If you go to .com, you'll go to our Austrian site. So .us is our American site.
Oh, I see.
And that's the best way to learn about Spermidine. If you want to connect with me, I'm in all the social channels as Don Moxley, at Don Moxley, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. Don't try me on Facebook. I have an account there, but I don't spend much time there. But you can message me through the social channels, or you can get us through the site. If you go to our spermidinelife.us site, there's a chat bot down there. If you connect with whoever's in chat, they'll get you to me.
Yeah. And make sure if you do decide to go on this route, you mentioned that I sent you, or you can use the promo code Urban, and that'll save you a pretty penny.
Urban 15.
I stand corrected.
That's all right. Got to make sure you get credit, man.
Yeah. So let's go on to the wind down questions now.
Okay.
So imagine that you have a virtual board of directors that you run all your biggest life decisions through. Who would you choose and why?
I choose. Well, I'll tell you, one person I work with a lot that I really trust is there's an outfit down in Pensacola, Florida, that's called the Institute of Human to Machine Cognition. And their director is a guy by the name of Ken Ford. His podcast is very good. It's one of the best on the internet. It's called STEM Talk, STEMTALK. So if you're into human performance, I think he's got one of the best ones on the internet. Ken is someone I ask a lot of questions to. That's a guy that I run a lot of these decisions through. Now, I talk to a lot of people. My personal physician, there's a guy here in Central Ohio, his name's Eric Serrano, Dr. Eric Serrano. We've been friends for a long time. He's a functional medicine doctor. He doesn't take insurance. I think it's important, Nick, to find brilliant people that you can bounce ideas off of. And Ken and Eric are both brilliant. You know, if you follow strength training, you probably recognize a name called Louis Simmons and West Side Barbell. Yep. Literally in 1983, as I was trying to learn about strength training, a friend of mine takes me over to the west side of Columbus, and we go into this garage, and it was like we were not in Oz anymore. There was no doubt about that. We were in Oz. We weren't Kansas anymore. And here's this guy named Louis Simmons that I was working with back in 1983. Louis is brilliant. It's important to find those people. It's important to find the people that are interested in knowledge and not necessarily promoting an agenda. I think that's really important. And that's typically how I make a lot of decisions.
Yeah. And I've also noticed that a lot of the early bodybuilders, or just bodybuilders in general, tend to be some of like the pioneers of biohacking, doing a lot of the things decades before they've become popular.
Well, what is biohacking? I mean, I define biohacking as modifying either your internal or your external environment in a manner that improves your performance.
Yeah.
Strength training is biohacking. It's modifying your external environment, your internal environment with an external source, stress. So a lot of these things come across. They were the early guys, and there's a lot of brilliance there.
All right. Imagine if there's a burning of the books and all knowledge on earth is gone, but you get to save the three most impactful books. What would you choose and why?
Okay. The book that I consider the most important book I ever read is called Flow, The Psychology of the Optimum Experience by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. A sports psychologist turned me on to Flow back in 1984. What I learned is people won't do things that they don't enjoy. And I'm not saying that it's pleasurable. You can have enjoyment. I can be standing on the edge of Mount Everest, degrees way below zero, the wind blowing. If I take the wrong step, I fall to my death. But if I'm in flow and focus, it can be very enjoyable. It's an experience that you want to be part of. There's times, again, when you get that flow, and flow is critical. And what I've learned and what I try to teach is that as leaders, whether in human performance or exercise, you've got to focus on that flow environment and creating that flow environment. So I think that's one of the most important books I've read that I refer back to. Oh my God. So struggling for books 2 and 3, you know, flow is a little bit dated. Dr. Csikszentmihalyi just passed away a few months ago. Oh. And there's a guy by the name of Stephen Kotler. He wrote, The Rise of Superman. And, I love Stealing Fire. Mm-hmm. And if you're into biohacking, Stealing Fire is a really cool book. If you're into performance, The Rise of Superman is a great book. Mm. And Stephen, with his Flow Research Collective, has really taken over that flow leadership and study. So if you're into flow and you want to focus on that, get to know the work of Stephen Kotler.
Yeah, I actually have both of his books on my Kindle that I haven't opened yet.
You know what? I'll throw in a second book that I think is important from a leadership standpoint. And I talked about it earlier, Changing for Good by James O. Prochaska.
Yeah.
How do you help people change? And there's a process that's very clear, moving from pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, change. And these are distinct stages. When I have a sales job, I use stages of change as a tool that I use to close sales.
Yeah.
And I think when you're trying to help people move through understanding stages, Prochaska's book, I probably talk as much about that as I do anything.
Yeah. And one thing I've noticed is that both of these book recommendations, book Flow and The Stages of Change and Helping People, I guess, Change, these both apply to both sports and like working with clients directly, and then also the corporate environment in the office.
They apply to the human condition.
We will move on to a quick rapid fire round now.
Okay.
I will start off with something that it's a new question I just thought of, but what's your favorite piece of gear, favorite device under $500?
You know, heart rate monitor, has to be on that list. An Aura ring is under that $500 list, but if I had to pick one tool, it'd probably be in my maces.
Oh, interesting. And surprisingly enough, that's actually one that we've gotten another time on this podcast. I've been recommended maces and I still don't have any yet, but I think I'm going to have to add it to the list now. Don, what's one thing that your tribe doesn't know about you?
You know what's funny about this? I was looking at this and thinking about this question, and I sent a note to my wife and my daughter. I go, what is the answer to this question? And they both came back, I am a huge fan of bunny rabbits. I've had rabbits as pets most of my life. I currently don't have any right now. mainly because, again, we're in a life transition thing right now, but I love rabbits. Mm. It's my spirit animal.
Oh, your spirit animal too.
Yeah. Rabbits are the most, parasympathetic thing going. How can you not sit with a rabbit and just not be totally zen?
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I haven't sat with that many rabbits, but when I have, they're definitely just very zen, relaxed, and their emotional state was contagious.
When anytime a human interacts with something, there's four questions. Will it eat me? Can I eat it? Can I have sex with it? Will it have sex with me? That's kind of the thing. And rabbits won't eat you.
This has been a blast tonight, but do you have any final thoughts, any last minute takeaways you want to make sure the listeners leave here with?
No, listen, we live in a really interesting time right now. At some point in time, we'll talk again and I'll give you my aquarium analogy. We live in aquariums now. And I when I do this talk, I put up my first picture is of a orca in the wild, and its dorsal fin is straight. But when you look at an orca in captivity, its dorsal fin turns over. There's not enough environmental stress on that orca for it to express its DNA to straighten that dorsal fin. Now, they reproduce, they stay alive, they don't live full lives, but there is an effect to the aquarium. The aquarium has an impact on you. Mm. And the challenge is knowing, are you in the aquarium or are you outside looking in? You got to figure that out. And what is the impact it's having on you? And again, this the aquarium, the jar, they're two glass cylinders. You've got to take a look at what is the impact. And it's impossible. There's one other piece that I go with here, Nick, is that we are all so different. You know, the DNA that we walk around with, depending on who you listen to, is either over 40,000 years old or a million years old. So it's one of those two. And in the absence of extinction, there is not evolution. There's only diversity. So we have been diversifying and diversifying and diversifying, and we are all very different people. It's possible that one person can thrive on a vegan diet and another person thrive on a carnivore diet, and they can both be right.
Yeah.
There's no need to homogenize this process. It's critical that you take ownership of your own. And again, using tools like heart rate monitors, using tools like heart rate variability measurements, seeing where you're at in this process, and then do this aggregated N of one study on yourself. You have to own your own process.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I'm a big proponent of looking at what the data say, but at the same time, that's an average of a bunch of different people. It's not going to be as accurate, as informative, as important as looking and saying, how does this impact me? Of course, sure. You want to make sure it's something safe, first of all, but at the same time, to think that you're going to fit squarely into the average of some huge population is silly. And so the first step, like you're saying, is to get the right gear so you can measure, track, and hopefully optimize.
Now, don't get me wrong. I am a scientist at the core, and I believe in scientific work, but you cannot take the aggregation of a bunch of peer-reviewed papers and bring them together and think because there's just too much diversity. In all of those studies, there's high responders and there's low responders. You got to know which side of the bell curve you're on.
Yeah. Don, there's so much we can cover here. We'll have to do a round two at some point and cover your other fascinations. We didn't touch at all about the endocannabinoid system, your other molecular agents of recovery and performance. That's a whole other world I want to dissect with you. But we've already gone an hour and 10 minutes. So thank you so much for your time tonight and joining us on the Mind Body Peak Performance Podcast.
Thanks, Nick. And thanks to your listeners for giving us your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Until next time, this is Nick Urban and Don Moxley signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.